This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio
on WGR.
Well, I clearly want it both ways. I'm watching this at bat here just now in the Yankees-Brewers game. After a spring training where they use the automated balls and strikes, I'm like, I don't know if I need this. It's 162 games, nine innings. Just, do we really need to every ball or strike call to be right? Can't we just sort of live? Most of them are. Can't we just sort of live with it? But now it's the Yankees, and this Milwaukee guy comes up with the bases loaded. He batted 118 last year, and he gets hooked twice. Two pitches outside that box. I'm like, oh, if only I had the robot ump for this at bat. Sorry, Sal. Sal's a Yankee fan. I guess it timed out okay. I was worried that this guy would still be batting here when you came on if you're watching the game. Like, oh, perfect timing, right? But Yanks get out of the inning, and we're okay here.
Yeah, me too. I actually have it in front of me watching it as I talked to you, and the same thing was happening. The third, what could have been the third strike, which the Yankees thought was a strike,
right,
might have been the best pitch of those three. And I think they were all out of the zone, but actually that one was called a ball, and it might have been better than the other two that were called strikes, actually.
You can't blame the Yankees for thinking they would get it after the
right?
First two strike calls in the at-bat, but they didn't. So 2-1 Yanks, bottom of the sixth. Great that it's, you know, sunny there, right? We get excited for opening day. Yanks were first game up, and you hate it when it's like, oh, no, snowed out, something like that. Hopefully we get lucky tomorrow here.
It's going to be close to 80 on Saturday at Yankee Stadium. How about that? It's going to be, I think, in the high 50s here. They're going to be 20 degrees warmer at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx on Saturday. So that's the next game. They don't play tomorrow. That happens all the time for these early season games. They build in more off days early for the rainouts, even the snowouts, I guess, Mike, which reminded me the 96 opener was on the other day on YES. And I remember that game. I remember watching it. It's Andy Pettit, young pitcher for the Yankees, gets the opening day start, and he's literally starting against the Royals with the snow falling pretty hard around him. It was on TV the other day, and it was fun to watch.
Is that a Giambi home run to win it or something, one of those? Is that game? I'm not sure if it is.
Might have been. I don't remember that one specifically. I do. What was crazy to me was, actually.
Maybe later.
So I turn it on, I'm listening, and I'm watching, and it's John Sterling on the television call, right? And they have Rudy Giuliani in the booth with them. And they're talking about the potential new Yankee Stadium that needs to be built at some point. Now, remember, the new Yankee Stadium didn't get built to 09, I think, right? So we're still a good you know, what, more than a decade from when it actually happened. I do not recall, and I did not know. There was a big push, in fact, from Sterling and Michael Kay, who were on the broadcast. There was a big push to put it on the west side of the city in the what's called the West Side Yard, the rail yard. Okay. And I didn't know this. And there was going to be some big facility, and then they ultimately decided to put it across the street from where it is. And they go into this huge discussion, and it, and if, like, you put yourself back in 1996, I would have come out of it thinking that's where the stadium's going, the way they were talking about it, to be quite honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great to have baseball back. And again, rain possible tomorrow, but we'll see with the Bisons game, which is scheduled for 2 o'clock. Earlier, speaking of baseball, Sal, we had listeners call in with why their favorite team is their favorite team. Because I've wondered, yeah, if maybe Buffalo is more diverse in this topic than it used to be, because it's, you have access to every team, right? As opposed to when we were kids and it was the Yankees and the Mets or the Blue Jays. What I think I know it, maybe it's more on the traditional side, which of course is fine. What's your story for being a Yankee fan?
I don't really know if I have one specifically, but, you know, growing up in Buffalo, I would say this, just family members. My family weren't like really big baseball fans, but I do remember my grandfather watching games when I would go to his house, and the games would be the Yankees, they would be on. But so maybe I would sit there and watch that a little bit. But I think I had already gravitated a little bit towards them. But I do remember that, and that probably got me a little closer to it. It wasn't like he was this hardcore fan, or at least that I knew of. Maybe he was. But, you know, I remember watching the Yankees, just, you know, the old like picture of an older man, you know, sitting down, watching the game or having it on the radio. But it was always the Yankees. And I just think my friends around me, we are all just Yankees fans for some reason. You know, I'm an Italian kid who grew up in Buffalo, and I think a lot of times that is what happened in Buffalo, New York. You know, Joe DiMaggio, and, you know, it kind of translated, and Phil Rizzuto and those guys. So maybe that's why. I'm not really sure. I don't have a specific story, but I've always been a Yankees fan. I do remember when the Bisons switched to become the Pirates affiliate, and I thought to myself, oh, maybe I should be a Pirates fan because mm-hmm. of the Bisons, right? I'm glad I didn't make that switch. But I thought about it when I was younger. It didn't happen, of course. And, you know, but I don't know if I have a specific story. I do remember, however, people around me always being Yankee fans.
Big leather chair, maybe a cigar.
Yeah, right.
One of those deals. All right. So, you know, you and I spent the day yesterday together talking a lot about many of these Bills topics that we've been all over. The draft and, you know, free agency mostly has played out. And one big one is still cornerback. And just what are the Bills going to do about that? Still options in free agency. You have Dane Jackson. You have Ingram. You've got players on the team that might be candidates for it. And then, of course, the draft. I just wonder sort of what your guess is here. Like, do they have money to make a bigger move at that position? You still have Douglas also as a possibility. And then, you know, corner is a fairly commonly mocked position to them in the first round. One player we talked about yesterday with Chris Trapasso, Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky. What for you is the most likely outcome?
Most likely outcome is they sign another veteran to maybe pencil in there. And I would say even more so pen if it's Russell Douglas, because maybe there's another guy who they sign who you're not so sure. And then you have Dane Jackson, who maybe, if it's not, I'll say it this way, if Russell Douglas gets re-signed, I think that he automatically becomes the starter opposite Christian Benford.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't doubt if they revisit that. If it's another veteran, unless it's kind of a surprise, like, oh, wow, like he went and got Asante Samuel, right, or something like that, it's probably a guy that competes with Dane Jackson for the other side. And I do think they go corner early in the draft, even if they were to sign Russell Douglas or another veteran. And I don't want to forget about Jamarcus Ingram. I do this a lot, and I'm like the number one Jamarcus Ingram guy, right? I've always loved him, and I think that he will factor in here in some capacity. It's just always been hard for me to get to, oh, yeah, they're just going to let Jamarcus Ingram walk out there, you know, and be the starter. I think right now you'd probably put Dane Jackson ahead of Jamarcus Ingram on at the outside corner spot. Maybe. I'm not sure. It's a minimum deal. Maybe not. But I do think they got to get someone above those guys. And then, hey, maybe those guys, one of them still wins the job. It's a competition, and then they're still going to obviously, you know, draft. They still have to get to another 23 players on the roster. They usually bring, you know, quite a bit more than what they have right now at outside corner to training camp, which is how many? One, two, three, I'm counting, four If you count Harder your couch as a slot guy, you really only have four outside corners. So you're probably getting at least two, maybe up to four, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think, I'm going to put it this way, I think I'm rooting against the idea of bringing Douglas back because I just don't like how it looks at this point. I mean, it wasn't a great season, and I think the Bills have made it known by their actions that they were not eager to bring him back. Go see what you can get. Maybe there's a number where they would do it because they do need somebody. But I think what they're telling us is that they want to find a better idea.
Yeah, I think that's right. But look, what I don't know here is Rasul Douglas's thought on this.
Yeah, right.
Maybe the Bills want Rasul Douglas back and he wants to do something else. I'm not sure. You know, I always wonder if the player has a little bit of a role in this. And maybe the Bills have thought, hey, you know, we still think we'll get him. There's not going to be this market. We'll wait for the market to sell on him. You know, he'll come back. It doesn't have to be the case because we're so far deep into it now. You get more of the feeling of what you said, which is feels like they kind of want to go in another direction. But the longer this goes, it's kind of weird to me to think that they would have a plan to just say, we're going to draft someone and he's going to be the starter. I don't think you can have that plan. And it would stun me if the Bills had that plan. It's just not the kind of organization that does that. Mm-hmm. Yes, they drafted Kyrie Elam, but that wasn't necessarily just to become a starter. He was going to compete. And sure enough, he got beat out by another rookie, right? Christian Benford. So, yeah, it could happen. I just don't think it's necessarily the plan to make it happen, if that makes sense. So I think you're going to add another veteran. I think you're going to draft somebody pretty early in the draft. And then you're still going to have Ingram and you're still going to have Jackson. And as always with these things, I like to remind people, and this goes to Ingram more than anybody, they have a lot of faith in the guys that have been in their system and program more than the fans do because they haven't seen them play as much. That's why they've been developing a guy like Jamarcus Ingram. Jamarcus Ingram has been in this program for 3 years. He's had time. He's played well when he's played. He has position flexibility. We haven't always seen him at outside corner. But it's the same thing that happened with Terrell Bernard a couple of years ago. When Tremaine Edmonds left, and it was assumed by a lot of people that Terrell Bernard would become the starting middle linebacker. There was a lot of trepidation amongst Bills fans. And I understand he had one start, was not at Mike, was at Will. He did not play that well against the Jets that particular game. And he's a bit smaller. But the Bills kind of knew what they had, right? The Bills, they were with him every day. They groomed him. They developed him. It was only 1 year. And they said, we're comfortable with this guy starting. So I would not discount it that they feel that way about a guy like Jamarcus Ingram. Again, not necessarily even as a starter, but at least to compete for the starting job.
Right. Last thing on this. You know, you might get a call or two, or I might, over the course of the next month, pointing out the, sorry, but failure with Elam as like a reason to wonder if the Bills would not be up for another round one cornerback. I think I might think of it more the other way around. Like, I think the Elam thing was probably so specific to him that there's no lesson here in terms of draft capital or anything like that. Would you agree?
100% agree. I don't think it would have any impact negatively on them drafting a cornerback because Kyrie Elam didn't work out. I think that was – it will force them to evaluate their process in that particular position, but anybody really – what went wrong? What did we get wrong? Was it on us? Was it on him? Where did we go wrong in the development, but maybe specifically the draft process? That's going to happen. But I don't think it has anything to do with what they do this year. If they feel that there's a corner there that they like when they step up to the when they're on the clock, I don't think having what happened with Kyrie Elam will have any impact on them making that pick.
It does seem to me at this point, still a month out, that there's a pretty good chance of that being the case, where there's a very live option or more than one among corners in the draft when the Bills pick comes around. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off this week. You know, similarly, Sal, what is for you the most likely outcome with James Cook? Of course, we've talked about him a lot. I've kind of been sitting here mostly assuming that there is a deal 3 years-ish, you know, good money, but not $15 million. I kind of just expect that to come down at a certain point. Each day goes by, and maybe the odds change on that front. But unless Cook really wants to work him, like to a very interesting extent, I think the Bills would probably want to, you know, quote, reward him, and he comes in at a good number.
Yeah, I agree with that. That I wouldn't be stunned. I wouldn't be surprised at all if all of a sudden we get a 3-year type of deal, gets a bunch of money up front to keep him happy and say, now you're paid. pretty handsomely amongst, you know, some of the better running backs in the league. And then as the deal goes on, even though the numbers get reported a certain way, it's not this, you know, complete commitment to all this big money over the next several years. So I wouldn't be surprised. I think the most likely thing that's going to happen is he's still a member of the Buffalo Bills, though. And it's important to remember here, he is under contract. Can he make it messy? Sure, he can do that. I don't know if he would want to. His agent would want to. You know, that's a different ballgame once you start doing stuff like that. But he is under contract, and if he does not show up for training camp, it's $40,000 a day, and that cannot be rescinded. He's giving up a lot of money, and he's a guy that wants to, you know, if he can have a really, if he does go into a fourth year, a walk year, he could have a great year and make maybe even more money on the open market. He would have incentive. Of course, he wants to get paid. He wants to do that now. So to me, the most likely outcome is, A, he's on the roster. He's playing. I've always seen that as a more likely outcome than him not on the roster and getting traded. Is it out of the realm of possibility? No. But the only way I think they get there, Mike, is to go that, you know, the nuclear option, which is what we're just talking about. Hey, he's going to just really stand firm and say, I'm not playing for less than this per year and this money. And I think at some point, if that happens, Brandon Bean's got to make a call. But he could still, say, no, you're playing on your contract, and then you can walk, and then we see if it winds up getting messy. I think that he's on the roster in 2024 in some capacity.
That $40,000 a day, is that like a flat number for all players, like in the league?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it is. I have to go back and look. But that changed with the new collective bargaining agreement, because what it used to happen was, as you know, it was like, okay, the guy got fined a certain number a day, and then he comes and you're like, oh, yeah, we're just going to take care of it and not worry. Can't even do that anymore. The league, one of the things that they wanted with the NFLPA was to make it very prohibitive and penal for a player to miss training camp and to sit out. And it's $40,000 a day. I think that goes across the board for anybody. It might not be the same for a guy. Now, I say this. The only time it is different is if a guy is an unsigned rookie, right? He gets drafted and he is on it. He hasn't signed his rookie deal yet. He got drafted in, you know, first or second overall, and he doesn't show up. No, fine, because he's not under contract. But if you're under contract, it's $40,000.
And you almost never see that anymore. If ever we did. Just to ask on Cook, say he's not here and it's, you know, kind of last minute. They'll have drafted somebody. Maybe there's another veteran. How big a loss?
If Cook isn't here? If Cook isn't on the roster?
Just to ask, right. Like, his value to this for you.
Well, I think it's a loss. I think it's a substantial loss to the offense, but I don't think it I don't think it changes their potential outcome for the season. So yeah. I guess you could say maybe it's not a big loss. He's just really he's important to what they do. And behind him you have a guy like Ty Johnson who can do a lot of things, and Ray Davis who had a really nice rookie year. But once you start peeling away those layers, it gets a little harder for those guys to do those things and to have the depth. Because if James Cook misses a game, if James Cook, you know, on certain situations, he has to be off the field. So it gets harder, but I don't think it changes their ceiling outcome for the season.
That's how I feel too. UFL tomorrow. Interested?
No,
not at all.
If it's on, I'll watch it a little bit, right? Like if I'm scrolling around and there's some football on, I'll watch it. So from that capacity, but not really.
I should look for names. I haven't done this just to see, like, maybe Bill's names on the rosters there in the
at that too. You're right.
United Football League. All right. Anything else I should mention? I mean, it's not been a big news day. It's been baseball's day, and I like that. Did you know, by the way, back to baseball as we wrap, you're familiar with Max Muncy of the Dodgers?
Yes, I know who he is, yes.
Did you know that there's a new Max Muncy in the major leagues this year?
I did not know that.
For the A's. We have two Max Muncys now. Same spelling. Same birthday.
Come on.
Yes.
No way.
August 25th.
No way.
Yes. Two players in the majors named Max Muncy, and they share the same birthday. Enjoy that.
Do you know if they're I'm going to look up right now. Do you know if they're both named just Max? Maxwell? My son is Maximilian.
I think they're both Maxwell, and they have different middle names.
That's incredible.
Isn't
that really
it?
Is.
It's the best. I just got
the same birthday thing is incredible. Awesome. It's unbelievable.
It's awesome.
What are the odds of that?
I just wonder, what is that like to find that out if you're one of the Max Muncies or you're the older one? Like you're the major league. Your name is Max Muncy. People know it. Dodgers, world champs. And then here comes another one. Like, does that not blow your mind that somebody has the same name?
It does.
And then you get the birthday news. And that would just be, I don't know. I've never heard of anybody with my exact name. So I'm sure there is somebody, but. Not that I don't know them. Maybe if they had a sports radio job or something, that would be kind of wild.
Sweet 16 tonight. Are you watching that?
Nope. I am out on everything, so the tournament is over for me.
Wow. That's all you care about, huh?
That's pretty much all I care about. I don't have a Cinderella story. I have Carlin. You know, I'm hoping Florida wins because of Carlin Hartman, who's on their bench. But
yes. Yes.
No, it's not a great watch for me, the tournament at this point. I need something else to go with it. Different than I used to be. I used to love these nights. But yeah, I don't really care who wins. Do you?
No, not really from that regard either. Like we did, Josh and I played a game. It was called Sweet 16 Survivor, where we knocked teams out until we got to a team we'd root for. And honestly, I was fine knocking a lot of these teams out, any of them. Yeah. I do root for Connections. I will root for Carlin, obviously. But I also don't love when the Gators win because I have a lot of friends down there and people in Florida who like to celebrate and rub it in your face. They have a national championship in both college basketball and football. You know, Nate Oates, obviously root for him, former UB. And then Roddy Gale, he's from Louport High School, Michigan. Really good player from Michigan. He actually was at Louport until his junior year, I believe, and then he transferred to another high school out west. So there's some local connections that I like to root for. Other than that, and coaches, I root for coaches, but not really. I don't really. It's a Sweet 16 that has a lot of really big, really popular programs. So there's no kind of sneaky, pesky underdog to root for here.
Thanks for mentioning Nate. I echo.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That, you know who the underdog kind of is Calipari. And that's weird, right?
Because that's amazing. You're right.
He's the 110 seed. Do you like him? Do you root for him? I kind of do.
This is funny, Mike. You asked this. You know, I've never liked Coach Cal until maybe the last few years. He's grown on me a little bit because I used to really believe that Coach Cal was all about, you know, maybe cutting corners and getting guys and recruiting and not being a great coach. I think he's proved his worth as a coach, though. I really have. And I like that. He's turned me a little bit because I think he's proven his worth as a coach. I'm still debating about that jacket he wore the other night, if I like it or hate it. I can't really tell, to be honest with you. But no, I do now. I do root for Cal now after seeing, you know, what he was able to do this year with that group.
Yeah. I'm a yes on the jacket. And okay. I liked him against Patino. I mean, that's a great story, too, Patino's year with St. John's. But Patino was favored, and he kept a star player on the bench, which was kind of controversial and maybe out of spite. And with that, I was all with Arkansas.
The other kid to root for is the kid from BYU. Have you seen this story? Richie Saunders?
No.
His great-grandfather invented the tater tot.
Well, there's another true connection to get into. We had two Max Muncies with the same birthday. We've got the inventor of the tater tots. You know, it's the off season. Sal, thanks.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. We have the Sabres tonight. Paul Hamilton will join me at 6. Most of today, talking about baseball opening day and asking you if you'd like to share your reason or reasons for why your favorite team is your favorite team. Because I've been wondering if Buffalo, because of the changing times, like just the access we all have to every sports team and every game of everything, that maybe we're not as concentrated in who we root for. You know, football, hockey, obviously. But baseball, maybe it's just more spread out. Because if you want to watch the Seattle Mariners, you can afford to do that 162 times, then you can do that. And it's not just like the, quote, local teams. 803-0550. I'm good if you want to share your story. We had some really fun ones in the first hour. Again, the Sabres and the Penguins tonight. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Abdul Carter's going to go before the New England Patriots pick at four. It'd be an upset right now if Abdul Carter made his way to number four. I would handicap Abdul Carter right now as the likely pick at number two today. We reserve the right to change our mind. A lot of things change, but the way this is shaking out to me, it looks like he's tracking to be a Brown, and let's see how it plays out.
Adam Schefter. I get it. I mean, Carter and Travis Hunter both sound like uniquely gifted non-quarterbacks. It happens that the Browns and the Giants, even with the Giants doing what they've done in free agency, could still use like a franchise guy. So that'll be a fun one to track. I can certainly believe that, like Sal was saying yesterday, it kind of comes down to how they feel about Shedeur Sanders. Because if you liked Sanders enough, you would just do that, especially Cleveland, with a guarantee that they'll get one of the top two guys if they want one. Instead, maybe they do this, and then round two or later for a rookie. There's every reason for the Browns to want to get somebody in there through this draft, even if it's like more of a middling prospect than Sanders. We'll see. Month away. It's Thursday, so kind of not the exact date, but 4 weeks from tonight, we're doing that. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for listening. Bulldog is off through Monday. Talking baseball today a lot with it being opening day for most teams. Do you have an interesting story about why your favorite team is your favorite? Or even if it's not interesting, I think there are a lot of good ones out there. One caller earlier mentioned that it was his little league team. He was the Reds or something. And so he liked the Reds. And their guy with the Cubs had that fun story about drinking a bottle of champagne that was meant for the Cubs in 1984 had they won the pennant. But they didn't. And local bars had the champagne and just gave it away or something. This guy and a friend agreed that they would not open it until the Cubs won a World Series, if they ever did. They did, 2015, maybe? Whatever year it was. So they get together and they open the champagne, and guess what? It's horrible because it's wine, and it's been sitting for 30 years. Whiskey, you're fine, I think. Wine, beer, no. Didn't work out. Let's take your calls again, 803-0550. Pat is next. Hi, Pat.
Hey, so I grew up, watching the World Series like 8, 9 years old, and I'd pick a team I'd like if the Athletics were in it a lot back then. And then 1991, I was 10, and Cal Ripken was having his MVP season, and I was really into it, mostly just reading about it in the paper because the games weren't on TV. But then I just settled in, and I was an Orioles fan. And, growing up, my brother was a Red Sox fan, and my other brother liked the Cubs, and my, friends from around the neighborhood liked the Yankees and Blue Jays, things like that. And then when I was about 14, my Cubs brother fan, got a job in Baltimore, moved out there, and I had stuck with the Orioles the whole time, wearing Orioles hat every summer, and I went down to visit him, and sure enough, Cal Ripken hits 2 home runs. It was my first Major League Baseball game ever in Camden Yards, and it was awesome. So stuck with the Orioles ever since, and, it's been tough lately, but they're on the upswing again now.
They sure are. Good for you for doing that, because I think I would be the type to sort of give up on it. Really would have hated the owner, and once Ripken was out of there, if he was my guy, I think I would have tried. You never know what your heart's going to lead you to, but I think I would have tried to flip, but you didn't. And right now it's a great team to root for.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to this young team. So
all right. Good. Thank you, Pat. Baltimore, what are they up to? Leading in Toronto, 9-2 in Toronto today. Yanks have made it 4-1 in their game, bottom seven against Milwaukee. Next is Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I grew up in the 70s when the Blue Jays were an expansion team, and everybody was a Yankee fan. So I could trade one Greg Nettles or Thurman Thomas for like 20 Roy Howells and Rance Mullnicks.
Thurman Munson, but yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I hear you.
So it was an economic thing. And back in those days, in grade schools, you could flip. And you were like basically gambling cards,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it was a matter of quantity, and I stuck with the Blue Jays. And then, you know, once they had Jesse Barfield and Joe Carter, you know, and, you know, Joe Carter won the World Series. I remember watching it in my girlfriend's common area, and been a Blue Jays fan ever since.
Makes sense. The 77 Blue Jays. Well, you threw a couple names in there, Michael. Doug Ault, right? Tough. Those are good tough names. The first Blue Jay team. Clancy was pretty good. I don't know if he was on the first team. I don't know that team perfectly, but by the, like the caller said, by the mid-80s, as we talked about with Mike Wilner a couple days ago, the Blue Jays got really, really interesting. And, you know, in the 90s, their wins were different because that was, I mean, all payroll. You had a star in the game who was available, Toronto would get him. Ricky Henderson, Molitor, Winfield, David Cone, Morris, Dave Stewart. Like, they all went to play for the Blue Jays. Really crazy, like, how Toronto was that team in baseball those early 90s. And they won twice. And really, since then, I mean, that's, it's just never been like that again. For one team to really dominate, like, legends just all showed up and played. It's probably not the whole list. I said Henderson, right? To show up and play for them. Kind of wild that happened. Let's go to Ed next. Hello, Ed.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
It's nice and warm here in the 585.
I'm sure it is.
The reason I'm a Cubs fan is back when I was younger, I had a manufacturing job working 4 p.m. to midnight. And at that time, it was the Superstations, WGN and WTBS. And I just landed on the Cubs. I've been a Cub fan for 40 years.
So you know what the thing is about that, Ed? You were in Rochester at that time?
No, I was actually in Phoenix. I'm sorry.
Okay. I think Rochester, because I went to college there, I think they had WGN on their cable and Buffalo didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we had the Braves and the Mets and the Yankees, but we did not have Harry Carey. Like, I didn't ride the Harry Carey ride. And then
I did.
You did. But I think Rochester did. I'm not positive of that, but I was thinking maybe that was true.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I want to mention is I don't know if way back when ESPN at 10 o'clock, Baseball Tonight, and all they did was baseball highlights.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever set my VHS player, and I started recording that every night and watched it when I got home.
Yeah, sure. That was great. Thanks for sharing that. I'm sure Rochester did. That's where I was when I first listened to him. And that was a trip. This was like old Harry Carey. Hilarious. Yeah, that had to be, maybe it wasn't on in the 80s, but on Grand Island, we did not have access to the Cubs superstation. Braves, yes. Cubs, no. Here is Wes next. Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
So my favorite team of all time, and it's always been the same, it's never changed, is the Cincinnati Reds. I remember the 1975 World Series. My best friend, who was also 9, he was a Red Sox fan. And a little side note, his older brother actually had a bat that was signed by Johnny Bench when he was playing for the Bisons.
All right.
But, I liked the Reds, and he liked the Red Sox. And, you know, the clip that we've always seen our whole lives of, you know, Carlton Fisk hitting that home run in Game 6 and all of that. But so many people forget that the Reds won the 7th game and won the World Series. And then they went on to sweep the Yankees 4-0 the following year in 1976. And they were just such a dynasty. And yeah, there's been many decades of futile, you know, since then. I guess they won it in 1990, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll always root for Cincinnati. Being in Buffalo, I didn't have anyone else. You know, I was young. The Bills had O.J. Simpson. The Sabres were a new franchise with Gilbert Perreault and all that. But for baseball, you know, it just landed on the Cincinnati Reds for me for some reason.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it makes sense. They were great. I mean, there's always that potential that if you're like that age, 10-ish years old, who was winning? And, I mean, Cincy was great all those years, 70 through, I mean, the whole decade kind of was like the Reds were really good or great. Bench has a great signature, by the way. The caller mentioned his friend having a bench bat. Johnny Bench has a beautiful signature. Have the Reds kind of won the poll today? There isn't a poll, but the Reds maybe have been named more than any other team as a favorite team. And it's not all for the same reason. Like it's bench or it's 70s or, you know, just family. That's my first favorite team. I've had like seven, but my first favorite team was the Reds, family stuff. And yeah, it's kind of been funny how many people have mentioned the Reds. One more here. Rob is next. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I kind of have a weird one. So I'm a diehard baseball fan. I love watching baseball. I collect cards. I buy and sell cards. I'm super into baseball. But I've never had a lifelong favorite team. So I'm 42 years old. I grew up, and everyone around here, Western New York, at least the people I knew and my dad especially, were diehard Yankees fans.
Sure.
So I watched a lot of Yankees games as a kid in the 90s and all that. And I found myself hating the Yankees somehow. I just hated the payroll thing and just buying the teams and all that. And so I guess I liked the Yankees early a little bit, but I kind of ended up hating them. And I was in college, early 2000s, 2003, 2004. I lived with a guy in Buffalo who was a diehard Red Sox fan. And we moved in together early in the summer of 2004. And diehard Red Sox fan all year. And by chance, we went to visit his sister who was going to college in Boston. And we were there during for like two or three of the games when the Red Sox made that crazy comeback against the Yankees.
All right.
And so that was obviously mega exciting, and you know, being with a diehard Red Sox fan, I kind of found myself also rooting for them during that period and all that. But and then in like 2017, I got into I guess back into when I was a little kid buying and selling baseball cards. And I got real into that, and specifically like the Prospecting and the Bowman products. And the first guy, the first product I went in on, kind of heavy. 2017 Bowman, and it had Ronald Acuna, first Bowman prospect cards, and he was kind of the first player that I really invested in heavily, prospect heavily, and really got into. And then through him, I kind of became a Braves fan, and I've kind of been, you know, quietly rooting for the Braves ever since, and rooting for Acuna to kind of, you know, not get injured every season.
Well, I mean, when he's good, who's better? But, yeah, like he's had a couple of bad injuries. Cool, Rob. Going from the Yankees to the Red Sox would be an interesting one to experience. Like, you're the anti-Johnny Damon as a fan. But it happens organically, just through people connections and just different ways. So thanks for sharing. Got a break here and a little bit of time only left before we get to pregame coverage, Sabres and Penguins. But we'll do what we can with it. Mike Schopier, Bulldog, is off. This is WGR. One or two more calls before we break for the Sabres pregame show with Paul Hamilton. It's been fun today. Thank you to everybody who's called in with your backstories on why whoever is your favorite baseball team on this opening day. We have, there it is, Jeff next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
1977, I was a 10-year-old kid. And we were on our way from Rochester to Sudbury, Ontario on our annual fishing trip. My dad and my grandpa took me, and we stopped for the Blue Jays and Milwaukee game when they were in the American League. Pretty boring game, 1-1 into the eighth. 10-year-old kid, I've had too many Cokes, and I have to go to the bathroom to take a leak. And Toronto hits the game-winning home run. Jim Clancy pitched that game, and I believe he went on to pitch a no-hitter at some point in his career, and I've been a Blue Jays fan ever since.
Even without seeing the homer?
Even without seeing the homer. I was looking at something else, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Okay. In that stadium, you could have been sitting in your seat and not seen the game. In exhibition stadium, you're sitting along first base, you're facing left field, not home plate. So you had to maybe sit like this the whole game. Was there Only once, I guess. Here's Pat with us. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Well, I'm following the bandwagon here. I'm a huge Cincinnati Reds fan.
Again, the Reds.
70.
Yes.
I fell in love with the jerseys and the red and white and the number 5 with Johnny Bench. But I will tell you a great story. At least I think it is. My son was a travel hockey player, and we're coming back from Rochester from a couple of games. And he was probably 10 at the time. But anyways, I'm going by the Batavia racetrack there. Mm-hmm. And on your station here, they're saying, hey, there's the big red machine is up at the Batavia Downs Casino. And I go, oh, my God, Brendan, we got to make a U-turn. I am definitely going to this thing because it would be my only chance to meet the whole team there. And to meet my boyhood idol, Johnny Bench. It was just like a dream come true for me. So I make the U-turn. I go in there. I meet Bench. He gets a picture with my son. And then Pete Rose is in the back room signing baseballs. And my son got to sit with Pete Rose. He put him on his lap and asked him all kinds of questions, you know, about baseball and stuff.
Great.
So it was great, great experience. I'll never forget it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's really good. Thanks, Pat. I'm glad that we were a part of that, getting you, making you aware of that show. I met George Foster, who was probably my favorite of those guys. His career, he ended up a Met, or played for the Mets. He didn't end up with the Mets, maybe the White Sox. Anyway, Foster made an appearance at a Rochester Red Wings game when I was working there and spent some time in the booth with him. That was pretty great. Really appreciate all your calls today. Thanks again. Next, the Sabres and the Penguins tonight. Paul Hamilton joins me. Will there be Slither? Will we recognize the songs being played in the arena? Always a high point in our conversations with him as we start pregame coverage. Sabres and Penguins downtown. That's coming up next. This is Mike Shope on WGR.